Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
We're talking football with the professor, John Clayton, as we do every day at this time with Bob, Dave, and more. If you guys have questions, text them in right now to 710-710, the Busy Hard Seltzer text line. We'll try to get to as many of your questions as we can before we let John go. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
So what's going on in San Francisco? Raheem Mostert wants out.
Well, I'm telling you, it's like a Super Bowl hangover. I mean, this is now the classic Super Bowl hangover where things just keep going wrong. And think about all the things that have happened to this team. You know, you got Mostert, who's Matt Breida, they traded to the Miami Dolphins. I mean, he was on a restricted tender, so they saved, you know, like $3 million on that. Next thing you know, you've got, the situation now with Mostert, who's, feels underpaid because I think he thinks he's going to be, the top running back. And, there's nothing going on with negotiations because they've got other things to do, like George Kittle. Then you have all the injury things that have happened. I mean, D. Ford, has an extensive knee surgery. Kwame Alexander, the linebacker, I think he had a torn pec surgery. Then you've got the injuries from the disaster in Nashville where, you've got, Debo Samuel with the Jones fracture. Another cornerback suffered a Jones fracture. They had to cut him. You've got Richie James with a broken wrist. He's going to be out for a couple months. And now you have Mostert trying to get a trade. It's like Super Bowl hangover all over again.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, John, that's what happens, right? Like when a team goes to the Super Bowl, everybody thinks that they were a bigger part of it. That's at least one of the trappings that I've heard, that once you go to a Super Bowl, all the players think, hey, this was about me, and they want more, and it's really interesting to see that. What about Sherman's comments? I don't know if you've heard. He was kind of, he was praising Kyle Shanahan, which, mm-hmm. as Jim said, I mean, you're supposed to do that, but he's kind of taking some shots at Pete, just a little bit of veiled shots at Pete Carroll.
Like, what kind of shots did he take?
Well, he was just saying that there's a whole quote here, but he was basically saying, yeah, he's one of those kinds of guys that he said Kyle Shanahan's more of a straight shooter than Pete. And Pete has a way of making sure everybody feels good, making sure he pushes buttons, and certain players are not pushing buttons on other players. And he just said Kyle's different. He's more one size fits all. I don't know. Maybe I just saw it as him kind of slighting Pete a little bit.
Well, you can see. I mean, it was not a good parting. Particularly, I mean, you're Richard Sherman. You feel bad about the standpoint. It's like, oh, wait a second. I play Hall of Fame football for all these years. I tear an Achilles, and you cut me. It's like, oh, that's good. And then, you have basically 2 years where he drove all the coaches and everybody crazy by, making these stands saying, hey, we need to do this, we need to do this. And so, one thing we know about Richard, he's always going to have opinions. I respect him a lot because he's one of the best guys I've ever dealt with as a player. But, he will cause some frictions, and naturally he's got to feel bitter, just like Earl Thomas, I'm sure, feels bitter about a lot of things. But the one thing that you have to say about Pete Carroll, sure, he's promotional, he's supportive, he's really good, and I think that his communication skills with players sometimes might be a little too rah-rah, but it works.
John, Sherman's 32 now. How many more years do you think he can play left corner?
I think it's year to year now. I mean, because you saw that particularly in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl, he struggled a little bit with his speed, and you don't know how this offseason, with no offseason workouts, affected him. I mean, fortunately, he stays here in the Seattle area. He actually works, I think, with a few Seahawks to try to stay in shape and do all that stuff. But, the one thing that can happen is that, if they start to think at 31, 32 years old that he's, got to make the move to a different position, I think that he can be successful as a safety because he's so smart. He's such a good tackler that I think he can work as a free safety. So even if the cornerback days are starting to end, and of course this is the last year of his contract with the 49ers, I still think there's a decent chance that he can still continue playing football.
Hey, we were talking about a team that's looking at about 14,000 fans for a game. How do you, and I know we talked about this, and I think Dave, or maybe it was Jim, said maybe it'll be a lottery. Just trying to determine how they figure out which 14,000 of their 65,000 fans, let's say, are allowed to come to a home game. Have you gotten any more information on how they might do that?
And there's 71,000, so it's even tougher.
Yeah, it'll be different in every stadium, obviously, but just how they're going to determine which fans can go and the rest of them.
No clue on that one. I guess maybe there's a seniority list and maybe a list of who's the highest paying customers and all that stuff. But that's still to be sorted out or at least explained. But the big thing, and this was one of the bolder moves by any team, you know, they basically told every season ticket holder, your season tickets aren't valid this year. You know, you can push the money into next year for the season tickets. You're not going to lose anything as far as where you are, as far as, the season tickets and all that stuff. So you'll still have your seats next year. But they basically said, we'll award them either on a game by game basis or some way of doing it, but no explanation as far as that goes. But the way they phrased it today, it sounded pessimistic whether they're going to get the permission of the people in Baltimore and in that county to be able to play with fans in the stands.
Hey, John, let me ask you, we were just talking about as far as coaches go. Who are some of your favorite coaches from the past that you really liked? I mean, I'm sure being there in Pittsburgh, Chuck Knoll. I have always really liked Mike Tomlin. I feel like, and I do it very scientifically, John. I look at him, I listen to him, and I go, I can play for that guy. But, you've been covering the league for a long time, and, you know, just this, just the way that Sherman was describing Kyle Shanahan almost sounded like Belichick. You know, it's like, hey, this is the way we do it. It's very straightforward. But who have been some of the coaches that you've admired covering the league for all these years?
There's so many. And, of course, we start with Chuck Knoll, who, I covered through most of his career. Certainly loved Bill Cowher. I mean, he was fun. Jimmy Johnson was a lot of fun. I liked him. I go over and look at Mike Holmgren, Andy Reid, John Gruden. You know, they've been so much fun to cover. One of my favorites, even though he was kind of wacky, was Jerry Glanville, because I'm the first person that he ended up saying that he was leaving tickets to Elvis, because he would call me up on a Tuesday and say, hey, partner, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to go leave some tickets for Elvis this week, and started that. And, he would tell me all the crazy fights that they would have in practice. Mike Martz was always a guy that I liked. I mean, there's so many of these guys.
Dungy?
Tony Dungy, absolutely. In fact, I was with Tony when he was a player, safety for the Steelers, and then he came back at the age of, 25 or 26, and I saw him in training camp and says, Tony, what are you doing here? I'm interviewing for a coaching job. And through the years, I spent so much time talking to him, and trying to, hope that he does get a head coaching job, which he did. And he's like, that's the thing. There's more people that, I love talking to and being around coaches. Ron Rivera is a guy that I've liked a lot. So there's a lot. I could spend a half hour talking about that, but I won't.
So, John, this 35% in escrow, players' salaries, that didn't go over very well with the players. I have a suggestion. What if the owners came back and said, we changed our mind. We're going to go with 45%. How do you guys feel about that? I'm kidding, John, but where are they going to go with this situation?
Rejected. And I think people are kind of overreacted because, this is not like baseball with the players and the owners and, Fred Manfred. I mean, these, they've got a 10-year agreement, right? And they're all locked in for 10 years. And so it's like they're going back and forth on things. It's like, okay, so, the players did not want to do the coming in a week before the start of training camp, 7 days before. And so now the owners come back and they say, okay, well, we want two preseason games because we need to see you on the field. The players come back and say, no, we're not going to do preseason games. And then, of course, then they come back and they say, okay, so we want the 35% in escrow because, we're going to be losing money and this could help manage the cap a little bit better. And the players come back and say, no, wait a second, we'll just borrow from next year's cap. And so let's not do that. So it's just a back and forth that'll be resolved here in a couple days, but it's just negotiations more than anything else.
Hey, John, what do you make of Josh Gordon putting his Super Bowl ring up for auction? I read the story, and they're implying maybe, he's missed out on millions, and maybe he needs money, and, I'm not sure how much he's made in his career, but have you heard much about his financial situation?
You'd have to think it gives an indication that money's got to be a little bit tight, and to put up, you know, because again, to get $100,000. And I think what it also tells you is that, you know, he might be willing to go for the minimum plus a signing bonus of $137.5, which would be great for Seattle to be able to get him at that number, which is what they basically got Philip Dorsett for. And so, yeah, it just shows me. And, you know, again, it's funny because, again, with the injuries they have down with the 49ers, maybe there was some thought that, okay, he might go to the 49ers, but that tax on, you know, on wages, what is it, like 13.4%? You know, that may not be one that he would want to go to.
State income tax.
State income
tax. I thought you were talking about the 49ers taxing.
No. State income tax. But yeah. So I would have to think that what this does, it shows an even better chance once he's activated and allowed to play that he could come in there and go ahead. Now, again, it's still debatable if he has two more games to serve, because if it was a sixth game on one of these, a PED or whatever, then he can go. But, you know, it just tells me money's got to be tight for Josh.
Hey, John, is the fact, and I know you talked about it on your show today, Quentin Dunbar hired a second attorney. Do you think that makes it worse? Is it better? Is it he less likely to play? What
hard
do you
to
think
tell
about that?
Because,
move?
You know, what I, and again, you know, we've done this so many times. Could we guess how Roger Goodell is going to handle anything? Because we can guess and just be wrong all the time. And so, you know, what they have to look of is like, okay, yes, it's an assault charge that would put him in a position to maybe, you know, be suspended for player conduct. But also, you know, there's evidence apparently that the victims say they weren't victims. And so they may take the tack. It's like, okay, let's just settle that in court and see how it goes, as opposed to be proactive and then make some kind of a decision. But I think what this does show that he's hiring a second attorney is that the prosecution is going to go ahead and try to hear this case. The problem is, I'm sure, like it is on everything else with, you know, a lot of these hearings being virtual and a lot of hearings being, you know, delayed, is that this thing is going to go into the season, if not longer. I mean, what are we, like 2 years now into the Michael Kendrick sentencing and nothing's been done there? And of course, he's not on the team and he's coming back of an ACL, but it just tells me that he's, you know, both these guys are in for the long haul, but still there's a chance that they'll be allowed to play. It's just a matter of what's Roger Goodell going to do on this.
John, I have a multiple choice question for you on how many.
Okay, wait
on this, John. Okay, how many NFL players will opt out from playing this season? Will it be A, 0 to 9, B, 10 to 20, or C, more than 20?
I think it's going to be more than 20 because, again, it's how you how you evaluate it, because, you know, it still could be one of those things where do you take the players who are still on the street that haven't signed and they're included in this? You know, because I counted up about 29 Pro Bowl players that are still on the street. You know, some of them are old, and I'm not counting the guys who've already retired, but you got 29 Pro Bowlers. And so, you know, what we can see is, okay, now, well, Devontae Freeman, if he doesn't get $8 million, you know, will he opt out? Now, again, he doesn't have a contract. You know, is Chris Jones, if he doesn't get his $20.1 million, is he going to opt out? But I think that you are going to see, you know, some names in there that'll do that, because they're going to be, you know, some will have pre-existing conditions. Some, particularly with the, you know, what, 629 guys on one-year contracts, you know, they may take the position. He's like, you know what? I'm not going to risk it. I'm just not going to do it. But I think I take the over as opposed to the under.
Hey, John, what do you know about this story I'm reading that the NFL Players Association president, J.C. Treader?
Treader, yeah.
Yeah, he escalated a disagreement with the NFL over the terms of training camp and the preseason amid the coronavirus pandemic, right? Apparently he wrote a blog and he said, quote, "The league is unwilling to prioritize player safety and believes that the virus will bend to football." So do you see a...
But this was one that he did a couple of days ago, right?
This is says yesterday.
Yesterday. Well, last night they got an agreement on the training camp protocols. So.
Okay, so it worked.
Yeah. Well, yeah, again, and I think JC's been doing a pretty good job, because I think he's been pretty level-headed about these things. And if there's some things that he didn't like, he's willing to speak up about it. And again, why not? Because, you know, it's, you know, open negotiations on trying to get this stuff done. But last night they did agree to the protocols. And so, as much as there were some things that he didn't like, there was enough things that changed that allowed both sides to be able to get that done. That's why, in the end, I think they'll get everything done, you know, maybe as late as Monday, as far as, you know, training camp. Because I think that, you know, he's going to, I think he's going to get his wish on the preseason games. Because really, when you think about the big picture, are there going to be fans allowed in the preseason games? And if there's no fans allowed in the preseason games, how are you going to make up the $13 to $15 million of revenue that's going to be there with fans in the stands? Okay, that's just not going to happen. Sure, you're going to lose some TV money, but you know, you're looking at, you know, a little over $800 million of lost revenue, which of course, you know, the players that takes their cap down next year, but they can still borrow it from the future caps and get that to move up. And then if college football doesn't come around this season, which is now starting to become more likely, you know, they might be able to squeeze out some more dollars for having games on Saturday, flexing them in that way.
So when you make reference to the preseason games, because I'm reading along in the story, it says he wrote that the NFL and the NFLPA joint coronavirus task force agreed to a 48-day training camp without preseason games.
I could be wrong about this, but I think it was probably a little vague because it says fewer preseason games, shortening the preseason. I could be wrong on that, but that's my understanding of you know, what it was. And so they did listen and go 4-2. But again, I think what it still comes down to is that this is still part of the negotiations between the two sides, and you make trade-offs. And you know, to me, JC makes a great point, even though his initials are the same as mine, which I have to respect. But JC makes the point. It's like, okay, should we really put efforts into you know, games that don't count and don't mean anything? Why don't we just get ready for the regular season? And the thing that I really respected of what he did in the letter that he put out last night is that, you know, he played to my strengths and said, okay, look at the ACL injuries and the Achilles tendon injury and the hamstring injuries, which, of course, you go back to 2011. As he said, the Achilles injuries doubled to a point where it started out in training camp. In the first 12 days, there were 10 Achilles tears that ended their season. There was 51 ACL tears, and he quotes that hamstring injuries went 44%. So when you look at those numbers, it's like, is it worth the risk, along with the fact you can get the virus?
John, I don't know if you can hear that in the background, but what you're hearing is Jim finally getting his sons to do the lawn, because I believe I hear actually, a lawnmower.
That's on me, because I have my landscape company place. Right now trying to, you know, cut some flowers down, and you know, they blow things around. That was on my end.
Well, Jim's teenagers have been asked to mow the lawn like three times, and so there's lots of pressure coming from the texters and people that are listening. Jim needs to get his boys mowing the lawn. Justin Britt, I want to ask about. Somebody, I think it was 206, asked about Justin Britt. You know, John, it's funny. He's a really good player. Mm-hmm. I really respect him. It's too bad that his knee got blown out, but he's only in his seventh year. I mean, it's not like this guy. I mean, he was a Pro Bowl alternate. Do we have any news on him? And do you think he's going to be able to get, you know, a pretty decent contract?
No, he won't be able to get a decent contract. He's coming off an ACL when nobody's wanting to pay. And, you know, even in a worse situation than it was for, you know, what you can see for Jadeveon Clowney, it's like he's coming off an ACL and nobody's going to even do anything, even talking to him, until they can get him in for a workout. And they haven't cleared out anything as far as physicals or anything like that. So he, like all the other ACL people that are on the street, they're not getting anything right now.
John, I like this question from the 425. Who has the better career when all is said and done, Patrick Mahomes or Russell Wilson?
They're both tied. I mean, because...
No, John, you can't say tied.
I just did.
I know. Can you pick one, though?
What was that?
Can you pick one?
Well, I mean, right now the edge goes to Russell Wilson, because he's been to two Super Bowls and won one and should have won two. And if he can get to the third Super Bowl, then he's going to be, you know, without doubt, a Pro Football Hall of Famer. In the case of Patrick, I mean, he's trending up, and right now probably trends up to be above Russell, but he hasn't been in the league long enough to be able to equal the accomplishment of Russell. And again, you know, everybody brings up the MVP thing, that Russell's not had a vote. Well, there's been eight votes right now with Russell, or seven, yeah, eight votes with Russell. Well, there's only eight votes, period, because it's a vote one person or not. And so, you know, that's why he hasn't had any votes, because there's only eight people that got votes since he's come into the league in 2012.
John, the 425 wants to know, why are the Patriots so tight against the cap? They're not paying a quarterback or receiver, so where is their money going?
I mean, you know, they had to take, you know, a little bit of a cap hit when they let Brady go, and they, you know, their big thing right now is a $14.7 million salary on their franchise guard, Joe Thuna. And if they had, you know, if Joe Thuna was just, you know, given, you know, not the franchise tag or let go, then they'd have plenty of room. But right now, the Thuna thing, which was a surprise, because really, when you look at their cap and you look at their team, there's not a lot of high-paid players. You know, I know that it seems as though the Seahawks and again, Pete Carroll and Bill Belichick like to build things the same way. They like to build it from the back to the front. And so, for example, you look at Belichick, and you know he's got big money tied up in Stephon Gilmore, and they've got three of the best coverage cornerbacks from man in the league. You know, they've got mobility and flexibility at safety in the linebacking core, and you notice that Bill doesn't like to pay defensive ends. Like, for example, he let Trey Flowers go, he let Chandler Jones go, and, you know, and it seems like the Seahawks and Pete, there's a certain limit of what they want to pay a defensive end, and they don't want to go overboard on it. So it's kind of interesting to see how the both work. But, you know, it's some of the departures that they've had, some of the releases that they've had, and the fact that they've got a $14.7 million guard, who most people think isn't a $14 million guard.
All right, John, 253 wants to know, if a player opts out from playing this year, does it free up cap space? And then I would ask another question, too. Does do they get accredited season still?
That is being negotiated as we speak. So the answer will come out here in the next couple of days. My guess is that they would put them on the, you know, retired list. And he would come off the cap. We'll see if there would have to be, you know, if it's a multi-year deal, there might be well, the cap hit would be more into next year than anything else. So, yeah, there would be cap relief. And remember this. I mean, I know that I bring up the scary numbers that, you know, maybe there's going to be, if there's a 5% positive rate for the test, there could be 150 or so players that will test positive. You watch, there's going to be a lot of players that are going to be failing physicals and not be on the team. And many of those may be, you know, healthy. I mean, or at least it's teams backing out of the deal because we've seen it five times in unrestricted free agency. So we're going to see a lot of movement like that. One of the things that the players are negotiating on today is that they're trying to see if they can get a smaller roster size going into camp. They're more 75 to 80, and that may be something that will be in the equation to negotiate.
Cam Newton officially signed with the Patriots today, John. Can you speculate on what his completion percentage will be? How many passing yards? How many rushing yards? Touchdowns and interceptions?
Yeah, I mean, I would say he stays around 58 to 60%. He's a 58%, and you are what you are. I would anticipate that, you know, he'll rush for about 800 yards if he gets to 16 starts. I would think that you know, his touchdown rates would probably be 22 to 24. We'll see about interceptions, but I think if he wins the job, you know, he's going to be certainly running a lot. And I think for passing, I think he'd probably be about 3,500.
John, we appreciate it. We'll talk again tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
There you go. If you missed any of today's cold, hard facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, just download the podcast at 710sports.com. Is Russell Wilson trying to send the Seahawks a message with his very public workouts with Antonio Brown? A couple of people that think he is. Talk more about that next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and More.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up in less than 15 minutes, what does it mean that Quentin Dunbar has hired a second attorney for his, I guess, impending case? We'll see what happens with that. But we'll talk about that in Sweeping the Dial. It is Bob, Dave, and More. A reminder, you do have radios in your homes. If you've got a smart speaker, tell it to play 710 ESPN Seattle or 710 AM, and boom, you got a radio happening right there for you. Meanwhile, we've talked about Russell Wilson and him posting, you know, videos of him working out with Antonio Brown and, you know, all of that good stuff. And there are a couple guys out there, not from Seattle, by the way, that feel like he's trying to send a message. One is our good buddy Marcellus Wiley. Feels like, yes, he is sending a message, but the Seahawks aren't hearing it.
Yes, he is sending a message here. Don't think he got the right address, because he's been sending messages this entire
offseason.
It's not getting delivered. Excuse me, management. I would love for you guys to re-sign Jadeveon Clowney. He creates havoc for our defense and helps us out offensively. Jadeveon Clowney on the roster? Excuse me, Pete Carroll, everybody. I love to run an up-tempo offense like the Kansas City Chiefs. Have they run an up-tempo offense yet? I would love for our offense to even be more pass-oriented. Stop running the damn student body left from USC days.
Have they changed their formula yet? He wants AB signed. Oops, we're not going to do those type of things. The list continues.
Sounds like he's implying they're actively subverting Russell Wilson, Dave, is what that sounds like. And one more before you weigh in, Emmanuel Acho on the same topic feels like Russell is absolutely posting these workouts for a reason.
So for Russ, not only to work out with AB, but to post it. Because it's one thing to do it in private.
Right,
you know what I'm saying? Everybody
right.
know that. Like, a lot of stuff, you know, you can get it done in private.
Right.
But when you come out with it publicly, you want the world to know.
Mm.
And Russ would only want the world to know that he is not only associated with AB, but positively associated with AB if he's trying to tell Pete Carroll, hey, bruh, he's good people. If he's trying to tell John Snyder, the GM, hey, bruh, he's good people. He's good by me. And if he's good by me and I'm the quarterback, right. he should be good by you as well.
Don't know that I agree with that, but what do you make of that? Do you believe that this is obviously intentional? He knows it's going to get a conversation going, so I don't disagree that he's trying to send a message, because I think Russell understands his platform and how many people pay attention to every word he says or any picture or video that he posts. It becomes a conversation piece.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I respect Russell so much, but it's just, if he is really trying to send a message, it's surprising to me, because he should know, you know, what that's about. I mean, we had Percy Harvin in here, heard, you know, some rumblings about Brandon Marshall a little bit. So, you know, and then he's had sort of, you know, been sideways with Baldwin a little bit at times. And, you know, and Doug did his differently, and they, I remember before every game they would always do this little boxing warm-up before every game. That was Russ and Baldwin's little ritual, so it wasn't like that was some poisonous relationship or anything like that, but Russ, I don't know, I don't want to say he should know better, but I'm just surprised that if that is what he's doing, you know, because why else would you work out with him? I mean, there's plenty of other receivers out there that would love to come and do workouts with Russell Wilson, but it just would surprise me that he wouldn't have the vision to know, you know, based on what Antonio Brown's background is, to realize that, you know, I mean, maybe he's fallen in love with his talent just like everybody else has over the past.
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, you go back to the superstar comment that he made at the Pro Bowl, where he wants more superstars here in town, and I can see Marcellus Wiley, I suppose, all these different things he went down the list of Clowney, no, up-tempo offense, no, more pass-oriented, no, Antonio Brown, no. Do you think Russell sits there and thinks about those things, though? Maybe he does.
That it sends a message?
Well, no, I mean, do you sit there, do you think that with what Wiley was talking about, like, you know, he's sitting there with Sierra or maybe talking to Jake Heaps or whatever, saying, man, you know, I really wanted them to get Clowney and they didn't do it. The up-tempo offense, it's not happening. They're not letting me cook. That's not happening. Antonio Brown, that doesn't look like it's going to happen.
I hope he's saying that. I hope he's saying they're not letting me cook. That would make me laugh if I knew he was saying that.
No, and then I agree with Emmanuel Acho. I mean, if he should have just done it in private. If he wants to work out with Antonio Brown, great. Go ahead and work out with him. But I don't know if it was Brown or Russell or both that posted their workouts on Instagram. But, you know, those guys, once you post it, everybody's going to see it. So, yeah, doesn't he have a – I mean, doesn't he get Antonio Brown's Wikipedia page? Can't he take a look at that? great. The guy is super talented. But, I mean, Russell's a bright guy. Does he not realize that if Antonio Brown's only getting 4 or 5 targets a game, that there's going to be this sullen figure out there and body language of like, hey, man, I was open or whatever. You know, it's just I don't get that. If he's – that firmly in Antonio Brown's corner, I think he should get out of there and target some other receiver. I think he's fine. Don't you guys think he's fine with the receivers they have? I mean, if I'm Russell and if I have something to complain about, I'm complaining about these offensive linemen they're bringing in to protect me. I'm not thinking, boy, I need another receiver. I've already got DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett. They brought in Greg Olsen. I've got great running backs to hand it off to. I don't understand that at all.
Yeah, I'm with you. If he's in his corner, I'd like to see him leave that corner, because again, we're talking about not a guy who's just a malcontent in the locker room, and that's fact. Right? That's not speculation. We've heard it over and over. We've seen it over and over. We watched it fall apart in Pittsburgh. We watched it fall apart in Oakland before it ever got going. Then he goes to New England, and then the other accusation, the other part of his personality comes out. Then we see him posting videos of him losing his mind with his kid in the driveway and him screaming at his mother's child or the mother of his child, and then he gets into a physical confrontation with a mover. Oh, and by the way, he's being accused of rape and sexual assault. Not to, you know, I mean, that stuff, again, I keep saying this, but he's not playing anywhere until that gets cleared up. Until there's some legal finality to that where they determine, hey, this whole thing was blown out of proportion. It's not the way it was. The accusations are false or what have you. Until there's resolution with that, he's not playing anywhere.
Well, and I think we need to be, sure to separate those that are alleged and the things that we've seen, right?
Exactly.
You know, and look, I mean, his track record has not been good, so I can understand why people are kind of, you know, trying him, you know, as guilty until proven innocent. But that's another thing where I'm thinking, if you're Russ, do you want to endorse this guy? And I don't know. I haven't seen the Twitter, you know, workouts or whatever. But still, I mean, it seems like a guy that you might want to keep it at arm's length just because the volatility there. So that part, I think, maybe something that he needs. Or maybe just looking at it like, hey, he wanted to work out. He's a good receiver. I wanted to throw, and he was there to catch. You know, maybe it's just something as simple as that.
Which he could have done in private, as they said, as Wiley and Acho said.
Yeah, true.
You could do that. Play catch with the guy, work out with him, do what you want. But as soon as you post it, you know, based on your profile, it becomes a story.
Well, I guess that's the deal with everything, right? I mean, you post things that you, when you want to sort of send a message or see people, want people to see things. So, you know, Antonio Brown, you know, do you guys remember when he was on Dancing with the Stars? I mean, he was a lovable guy. That was 2016. I know my wife watches that show, and I think yours does too, Jim. And, you know, I just remember him being a nice, lovable guy, and guy's gone over 1,000 yards, what, 7 times, 6-time Pro Bowler, 7-time Pro Bowler.
And he's a brilliant talent. There's no debate about that. And Dave, let me ask you this.
South in the last 2 years.
Let me ask you this, and this is an honest question because everybody brings this up, and no, I didn't see him on that show. Was that show before he took that hit from Vontaze Burfict? Because there are a lot of people that truly believe that hit changed him, that something changed with him chemically and his behavior changed after that. Whether that's just, one of those goofy things to talk about or there's some truth to it. Did that show take place before that or after that?
Yeah, I'm trying to look it up real quick because Vontaze Burfict, that was 2016 January, or no. Maybe it was 2018. Yeah, it was 2018, I think.
That he took the hit?
So, anyway, yeah. Mm. So, it was sometime after that. So, after, I know he was on Dancing with the Stars in 2016. So, yeah, I mean, and that's, I don't know if that's a stretch or what, but yeah, it's just, he needs to get himself right. And, you know, I'm not sure Russ wants to associate himself with him by posting that video, but you know Russ is such a good guy. I mean, I'm just going to assume that it's perfectly innocent. And you know, I've talked about Antonio Brown mostly about how he is as a teammate, not all the off the field stuff,
right?
And it's just surprising to me that anybody would think that was a good idea right now. I mean, you look at now what Mike Tomlin had gone through and with Gruden and, you know, I mean, it's just not working right now.
Yep. All right. Coming up, Andy Reid wears only the finest Hawaiian shirts when celebrating his quarterback's new deal. We'll let him explain as we sweep the dial. Coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
Listen, all in all, I think it's a great thing. Very seldom do you come out of a deal and go, you know what, it's a win-win. It's a win for the player. It's also a win for the team, the organization. And so I'm I'm one happy guy. I put on my best Tommy Bahama for all of you today, just to celebrate this, man. This is a big day, and it's an awesome thing.
His best Tommy Bahama shirt. That's how Andy Reid celebrates the locking down of Patrick Mahomes for a decade. You bring out the good stuff. You bring out the quality Hawaiian wear there, and that's what he did. Does he not remind you of our old guy, Matt Harden, here? Used to work here.
Yeah, he kind of does.
The shirts, does. Just seems like a different
that's
version
right.
of him.
Yeah, I love Andy Reid. I got to know him, not personally, obviously, but watching all of the stuff, you know, leading up to the Super Bowl. And it just seems like such a good guy and does a great job. Seems like his players love him. So, yeah, he's like he's the hot coach right now and couldn't win in Philly. You know, I mean, couldn't win the big one anyway. And, you know, there was some criticism of him, but he just seems like a guy that everybody loves. You never hear a bad word from a player about him, do you?
No.
No, you don't. You know, Dave, aside from having San Francisco in the points in the Super Bowl, I was actually happy for Andy Reid. Because, I mean, he's that guy that couldn't win the so-called big one, and it seemed like it was holding him back from getting Hall of Fame consideration. And so now that he has one with Patrick Mahomes there, you anticipate that he's probably going to have two or three more, at least several chances of getting back there and winning another Lombardi Trophy. And, yeah, I mean, I like guys that are casual like him, and I like guys that know they're overweight and they're going to wear the untucked shirts, and they feel like they're kind of hiding their stomach a little bit. They're not fooling anybody, but I've done that myself, so I appreciate that.
The Athletic's legal analyst Daniel Wallace reported on Tuesday that Dunbar has added Michael Weinstein to the defense team, and of course, that means there's not going to be a dismissal. So no dismissal is going to be imminent now. So what has to be done is figuring out, okay, so where do we go from here? When's the case going to go, and how's the league going to handle it? Are they going to put both Baker and Dunbar on the exempt list? I know that Baker, and I'm sure Dunbar, is also allowed to travel and, you know, be with the team. And so at this stage, it's kind of just wait and see. But the update now is that Dunbar has two attorneys, and this thing looks like it's going to go somehow to be tried out. I know that Dunbar said that the last week that the general feeling is that the longer they wait for the state attorney's office to move forward, the less likely it is to go away.
I don't even know what to make of this situation anymore. It gives me a little pause to see that he hired another attorney. I don't know what's going on behind the scenes or where this case is at. It just feels so convoluted with the way it went down initially with all these eyewitness identifications of him and Baker. And then, what, a day, 2 days later? Nope, wasn't them. From the same people who said, yep, it was them. So I don't know what's going on with this. I don't know that it's a good thing or a bad thing that he hired another attorney, but we'll see what happens. I hope he can play. That's all I can say.
Well, I'm hoping that he's hiring a guy that's a slam dunk guy. Maybe even the original attorney said, hey, if we get this guy on board, we could really get this thing nailed down. But you also step back and look and go, oh, wait, you need two attorneys to get you out of this one? Yeah, that could work that way as well. Boy, what a weird deal. I asked Clayton, like, have you ever seen anything this strange? I don't remember what his reply was, but this is such a bizarre case of, you know, it's like clearly they were there and robbed him at gunpoint, and then, like you said, Bob, all of a sudden, nope, wasn't there, and we have signed affidavits. You know, what a strange thing. But I don't know, maybe this thing delays so far that, as far as a suspension goes, you know, maybe it plays out in the future, kind of what happened with Jaron Reed.
It's a strange one. I don't think it qualifies as good news, though, that if you're getting a second attorney, especially when you have your lead attorney going on radio shows talking about how confident he is that the charges are going to be dropped or they're not going to file charges, whatever the case is. And I've forgotten how long. It's been a while now since the supposed incident took place, and now we're getting closer to training camp. So I don't know what to make of it, but I don't think it's good news for anyone who wants Quentin Dunbar to be playing right cornerback for the Seahawks, and hopefully I'm wrong about that.
Clowney update. Automatic request.
Standard.
Go ahead and put some words to it.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see kind of where that goes. Like, you know, that was brought up on the call the other day. When can we start to bring players in who are free agents and put them through physicals? And you can't right now. So when we can start that process, I've said it before, we're interested in him and see where it goes.
What is your knowledge of his health?
What I've seen on Twitter, I mean, brushing off the edge and hitting that tag. And, I mean,
that's it. And that's obviously a big concern with somebody coming
because,
off course.
Yeah, because, I mean, anytime you're dealing with whatever the contract's going to command, you want to make sure that the player is healthy, that you're able to allow your doctors to see him, to look at it, to make sure everything's going to be good.
Titans GM John Robinson telling Paul Kuharsky they're still interested in Jadeveon Clowney, but they need to be able to give him a physical in order to proceed. So the interest is there, but you heard him say, well, all I know is what I've seen on Twitter, which is like a lot of people. So maybe if we were in normal times without a pandemic, he'd already be signed with another team. If not the Seahawks, maybe it is Tennessee. Maybe it would have been, what'd you say yesterday, Jim? Carolina, that's your bet, your next bet.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the Titans will follow after that. If Carolina says, no, we're out, you'll say, I think it's going to be the Titans then.
You think I'd do something like that, Bob? I mean, come on.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, I do.
Well, I'm looking at the Titans. The Titans have $19 million in cap space. But, you know, after talking to Michael, was it Janitti from, what is it?
Spot Track.
Yeah. From talking to him, it sounds like, I mean, these guys can move the figures around and they can release players. And so I would think that any team is in play right now, especially after hearing that the Raiders offered Jadeveon Clowney a contract, too. So it's anybody's guess. And, I guess what is, again, just take it up right until the season gets started, just like he did last year, and maybe skip training camp. The thing is, if I'm him, on the one hand, I'm thinking this will be cool to miss training camp because I don't really want to be working out in August. But I would think that you would want that practice time to have the chance for a better season, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. I was listening to Paul Gallant this morning, and he was talking about how bad 2020 is and how all we need now is an alien invasion to complete the trifecta of bad things that have happened. And I know we don't feel sorry for him because he'll probably end up making like minimum $6-8 million. But still, I mean, for him, this has to be a really bad year because, I mean, I just the regret of having passed up that contract, of the things that he's been offered, and now the situation that he's in. And John and I talked earlier about whether or not you think it's the agent or him, but he is. Yeah, and he's supposedly banged up. He's got a knee, according to Brock. He's got the core surgery thing, and I don't know. I'm just hoping that Jadeveon Clowney is keeping his spirits up.
Yeah, I mean, it's when you talk about it in money terms for football dollars. Yeah, you can understand his disappointment. The talk was, is he going to get Khalil Mack money? Is somebody going to give him 21, 22, 20, somewhere in that neighborhood? Now we're talking about maybe 6, maybe 7. So, yeah, it's all relative. I mean, to us, take it in a hot second. But in his world and what he was being told and propped up is potentially earning, it's very disappointing. So I totally get that. Hey, baseball returns, everybody. The Mariners are going to play their first intra-squad game to get ready for their season. And 710 ESPN Seattle is the only place to hear it. Rick Riz, Aaron Goldsmith, they've got the action. That is Friday at 2:30. So tune in for that. Be pretty cool to hear those guys calling an intra-squad game. Coming up, how concerning is it that the NFLPA and the NFL are at odds on a lot of issues just weeks before training camp is set to start? We'll talk to Paul Moyer about that and everything else going on in the league. Coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.